morning, everyone, and thanks for accommodating us here with a different schedule this morning. This is a special meeting of the Portland City Council on November 24th. Would you please call the roll?
Novick.
Here.
Here.
Fritz.
Here.
Fish.
Here.
Saltzman. Hales.
Here. Good morning, everyone. We have a single item on the council calendar this morning, which is a continued item from a previous council meeting. So I'll be brief about the specifics of how we have council meetings, because maybe some of you were here for that one. This is a continuation of a previous council meeting. We'll be taking testimony of folks that signed up last time and then didn't get a chance to speak. We'll also be considering council amendments and taking further testimony on those amendments from those that came here today to speak about them. As always, we maintain the rules of decorum here in the chamber, so if you agree with someone and want to indicate your support, give them a thumbs up. If you don't, give them a thumbs down, but we ask that we not applaud or make vocal demonstrations in favor or against our fellow citizens so everybody has a chance to be heard here. If you're here to testify, you need only give us your name unless you're representing an organization, in which case you need to let us know who you're representing. With that, let's please read the item.
Item 1211, replace code chapter 16.40 pertaining to private for hire transportation in the city of Portland.
Mr. Novick.
We actually have two amendments to offer, which I'd like Mr. Hockaday to explain.
Okay, come on, please, Brian.
I don't know that I have those.
And let's make sure everybody in the council's got copies of the proposed amendments. I think I do. Commissioner Fritz may not.
No, I don't.
Do we have
four copies of the amendments, please?
Mr. Novick has an uncanny ability to schedule these hearings when my lead person, Claire, is on vacation.
That is not intentional.
I
highly value Claire's input.
Mr. Fish needs a set, too, and Commissioner Saltzman. So
thank you.
Okay, gentlemen, walk us through these, please.
Good morning, Mayor and City Council. My name is Brian Hockaday. I work for Commissioner Steve Novick. So Commissioner Novick has two amendments to offer. The first is the sheet of list of scriveners and typographical errors that we wanted to make sure we corrected. So you'll see that there, just to address some unintended errors within the actual code. The other, however, is a substantive amendment relating to TNC insurance. As you recall, at the last council hearing where this issue was addressed, there was an amendment adopted to strike language which essentially stated that insurance could be provided and maintained by not only the TNC, but also the driver or a combination of the TNC company and the driver. That language was removed and now just reads, insurance must be provided and maintained by the TNC. So this amendment before you adds some language stating that drivers do have the option of purchasing a rideshare endorsement, which is additional insurance above the city's required minimums. The TNC is required to maintain at all times the city's required insurance levels at all periods, and they must disclose to their drivers that they do that the drivers do not need to purchase anything additional, and that the specific levels of insurance are maintained by the TNC. The drivers still do have the option to purchase a rideshare endorsement. The product is not currently available in the state of Oregon. It's a relatively new product that's being offered in a few states, including Colorado. Metro Mile, as I understand, has applied with the state to provide, to offer rideshare endorsements, but again, it is not yet available, and this amendment makes it very clear that the TNC is always responsible for providing primary insurance.
And our concern, the last hearing, was that if we say there's an option, one or the other, then the TNCs will pressure the drivers into always buying the insurance themselves. So we had a language specifically saying that a TNC shall not require or encourage a TNC driver to secure a primary personal automobile insurance policy. Shall disclose in writing that drivers are not required to purchase and maintain their own insurance policy covering TNC activities. We also added language saying that The TNC shall advise affiliated TNC drivers that the driver's personal automobile insurance policy may be subject to cancellation or might not provide coverage because the driver uses a vehicle in connection with an affiliated TNC as specified in the terms of the policy. So we want to make it a violation of the rules for a TNC to even encourage a driver to secure a primary personal automobile insurance policy, and also to more directly address a concern that has been raised before that drivers should know that it's, although we are not, haven't seen a lot of evidence this is happening, or any evidence actually recently, that the driver's personal automobile policy might be at risk if you're a TNC driver.
I'll second for the purpose of discussion.
So I have a question of the sponsor. Steve, we discussed a couple of proposed amendments that I drafted yesterday, and I'm not going to offer most of them based on the conversations we had. But the question I have is, at some point, the rideshare endorsement may become readily accessible in the marketplace and may become almost an industry standard. What's the mechanism for us to revisit the question of whether that's something we're going to require?
And actually, Commissioner, I think that for this new industry, as for Airbnbs, for that matter, we should be revisiting a bunch of these issues as time goes on, more information becomes available, more products become available. So I am planning to ask for council to have probably a work session on a variety of issues relating to TNCs, maybe like after we're out of the budget season, maybe sometime before we're into the next one, like maybe sometime between June and September.
Okay, and as these things evolve in the marketplace and become available, we'll have a chance to be briefed on them and decide whether we think they are should be part of our regulatory system.
Yes. Another issue where I want us to keep on monitoring the studies that are done and the information we get is what's the environmental impact of TNCs. Right now, the jury's out. From people I trust think that they're persuaded on balance that the existence of TNCs results in fewer overall automobile trips. But New York City, I know, is undertaking a study to that effect. And if it turns out 6 months from now, a year from now, that actually there's strong evidence that we're increasing the number of vehicle trips by allowing these, I think we want to need to revisit the whole issue.
Mayor, I have two amendments to place on the table.
I have a suggested friendly amendment, Commissioner, at least I think it's friendly, Commissioner Novick, to add to number two about the disclosure in writing, that at the end, the disclosure shall include a statement that the TNC does not provide collision insurance. Would you accept that as a friendly amendment?
I'd want to ask Mr. Vergara and Mr. Hakaday if that raises any particular flags for them for some reason.
Well, it doesn't raise any particular flag for me. The collision insurance is an optional coverage under state law, Commissioner. This is simply a disclosure that the TNC has to make to the driver.
And it's my understanding that taxi cabs also are not required to provide collision insurance for the drivers that happen to be driving for them but own their own cabs. Is that correct?
That's correct. It's not in our code that they have collision insurance, but I think they do provide collision insurance for most of the vehicles, not all of them, and a few of the companies self-insure that particular coverage, as I understand it.
Okay.
Could you use your language again, Commissioner Fritz, because I think I have a question.
At the end of paragraph two, the disclosure shall include a statement that the TNC does not provide collision insurance.
Well, what if they did? So I don't know if that would be possible, but maybe it needs to say as to whether or not.
I would accept that as a friendly amendment.
double friendly.
And may I just add, in paragraph three, we are requiring that the TNCs disclose in writing to the TNC drivers the insurance coverage, including the types of coverage and limits for each coverage.
Maybe you've covered it then. Hear that? So you're proposing to require that they disclose what kinds and amounts of coverage they provide.
Right.
Yeah, but I actually think that that wouldn't necessarily result in a specific statement that we don't provide collision insurance.
All right.
So I accept Commissioner Fritz's friendly amendment as friended by the mayor.
Okay.
Thank you.
Getting awfully friendly.
All right. Other questions or suggestions about Commissioner Novick's proposed amendments, then we could take a vote to accept them for purposes of testimony and move on. So, ready? Okay. Roll call, please.
Aye.
Since I haven't had my expert staff person looking at the, looks like a couple of dozen technical amendments, I'd like to reserve the right to look them over. I don't know if we're planning to have a final vote today. I also have a question about the amendment, a technical amendment that I had requested to 1640.020A to make that language more clear, and I don't believe I received anything on that. But for the purposes of this hearing, I vote aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Osman?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. Okay.
Mayor, I have two amendments.
Other amendments.
And a question. Let me start with a question. Mr. Hockaday, I'll follow your boss's lead. When we had a discussion yesterday about some amendments that we were considering, one of the issues that we raised was whether in the context of someone that had Washington or California license plates, whether we would require a DEQ certificate of compliance. And I believe that the information you shared with me was that we're satisfied that Washington and California have equivalent standards, and therefore we would not require an additional certification from the DEQ. Can you just elaborate on that?
Absolutely. So we are including a new requirement for taxes and TNCs that they do comply with Oregon DEQ standards for the Portland metro area. That is new, and it's to address or to help address some of those environmental concerns that we have about this industry. We do not have an agreement with the state so that we could require that every single vehicle go through an additional emissions test. However, I can rely on some folks from PBOT who are the technical experts, but it's our understanding that California has higher DEQ standards than Oregon, and Washington's are about the same for Portland.
Okay. So, sorry. May I just ask a follow-up question on that? My understanding is that even Medford doesn't have, or Pendleton don't have the same air quality requirements that we have.
And if they do not have, those vehicles are not able to demonstrate that they meet or exceed the Portland Metro requirements, then they cannot be permitted to operate in the city of Portland.
How would we know?
Through a few ways. We can look for the Portland Metro sticker to make sure that, you know, it's gone through the test, or we can refer to other decals or other certifications from other states to determine exactly what the emission rates are for that particular vehicle. And most vehicles these days, particularly very new ones, they're not even being required to be tested by Portland and by many states because they do comply with stringent DEQ standards.
We heard, though, in testimony that you can go and buy, I don't understand what you say when the state doesn't agree to it, anybody can go to the DEQ and buy and do a test and get a sticker.
Sure, absolutely. It's just that we, the City of Portland and PBOT, have not entered into an agreement with the state so that we could include a requirement that all vehicles go through that. And we think that that would not be necessary because all vehicles already, many vehicles do meet those standards.
I'm sorry, I don't understand why we need an agreement for the state to do that.
The volume of taxi and TNC vehicles that would go through that test would be quite a bit.
And presumably they charge fee for service, so I don't understand that. But also, my understanding is it's the number of Utah drivers who are driving in Portland. What are Utah standards like?
I don't know how many Utah drivers are in Portland, nor do I know what the Utah DEQ standards are at the top of my head. I'm happy to look that up and provide that to you.
Thank you.
For purposes of today, Commissioner Novick, I would just like a commitment that we'll park this issue for future consideration. And since you've identified some environmental impact questions that you have concerns about, at some future date we'll take up the question about whether our standard is sufficient to ensure that people's cars are meeting our emission standards.
Absolutely. And I should note that the cars are required to be less than 10 years old. And as Mr. Hockaday said, newer cars tend not to have a problem with anybody's emission standards. In fact, in California, which has very stringent emission standards, they're not requiring exhaust tests for 2009 or newer cars.
And we've been engaged with BPS at the beginning of this whole process because we are very concerned about the environmental impacts. Nationally, there's not enough information known about the industry and its environmental impacts, but I think this is an issue that everybody around the U.S. is looking at.
Well, I appreciate the conversation we had yesterday, the fact that it's on the radar, and so I will not be offering an amendment today on that issue. I will be offering...
Can I just ask you a question about this amendment? You are offering the DEQ one.
I'm not.
No.
Oh, you're not? Okay.
Wants to have that issue examined and looked at again later. Is that right?
Professional team yesterday raised some concerns, but also made a commitment to follow up on this issue, and I thought it better to defer.
Okay.
So the first amendment I'm going to offer is on insurance. The last time we gathered, Commissioner Fritz offered an amendment, which I seconded, which would have required a minimum of $1 million of liability coverage in periods 1, 2, and 3. That amendment did not secure council approval. We've had some extensive discussions since then on this question. Reasonable people can disagree about insurance, but I'm offering an amendment that would require a minimum of $500,000 of insurance liability coverages in period 1.
Second.
Questions?
If I might speak to the amendment, we received yesterday some information from the taxi cabs insurance company representative that I hope we'll get some testimony about examining the data from crashes in taxi cabs and showing that between 75% and 80% of the crashes that taxis are involved in have no passengers in the car, which implies that they're in period one equivalent. And that the average taxi cab crash rate is about 0.5 to 0.6 crashes per car per year. So if you take a conservative estimate of 50% of the crashes happening in period one and 0.5 crashes per year with 2,000 TNC drivers on the road, that's 1,000 crashes per year. So in period one. So knowing that having good insurance doesn't cost that much more than having poor insurance. I know from I looked at my own records for how much I pay for insurance on the one car of mine that would be eligible for this ride sharing that's new enough. It would only cost about $100 a year to go from the state minimum to going to good insurance coverage. So what we have all been striving here is, first of all, to make a level playing field between the taxis and the TNCs. The taxis are required to carry 500,000 at all times. And second of all, to provide a safe system that protects both drivers and customers and the general public. And having 2,000 commercial drivers on the streets with only $50,000 in personal liability for death for a person is just not adequate. So the Commissioner Fish's amendment more clearly addresses the need that if you're driving commercially, you need to have adequate commercial coverage.
Mayor, the only other thing I would add, and then I would urge us to take a vote on it, is in over time, and we've had a number of very thoughtful hearings on this issue and other issues, the principal objections that I've heard to having a higher limit in period one are as follows. There was a national insurance settlement, and that settlement resolved the issue, and therefore Portland should follow the national settlement. To that, I simply say we have not felt constrained in regulating in this area based on national standards. In fact, Portland has taken some pride in setting the bar higher than the national standards or what we think is the practice in other jurisdictions. And I think in this area we could also take some pride in providing an extra measure of protection for the public. The second claim that we've heard is that somehow the market doesn't provide insurance at this level in period one. I think that's been effectively rebutted by testimony we've had. And my general understanding of the marketplace is that if you require people to have insurance and it turns out it's an overinsurance, there'll be plenty of people willing to offer it because that's a pretty good business model. So for those and other reasons, I would just call the question.
And I will say again that I think that the argument for a higher level insurance is a perfectly reasonable argument. I also think it's a reasonable argument that period one is sort of a period in between commercial service and personal use. Uber has given us their crash data during the a pilot period, and what they've had out of a million rides, 95 crashes, 11 of them have occurred in period one, 19 in period two, 65 in period three. So that's the data that we have so far. And by the way, Commissioner, period two is also a period when there's no passenger in the car. It's when a ride has been accepted, but when there's no passenger in the car. So I think, again, that this is an issue we want to monitor the data, and I think it's quite possible that some months from now or a year from now we might actually reverse this decision. But for now, I'm inclined to follow the lead. Yes, I'm talking about other cities here, but of Denver and Seattle and Ann Arbor and Austin and Chicago and the other cities that have adopted the model that we've adopted now.
Okay. Other comments before we vote? Okay, roll call on the proposed amendment, please.
Novick?
Nay.
Fritz?
This council is different from other councils because two members of the council have had dear relatives killed in car crashes. And for us to say that those 11 people who were injured in period one this year are somehow part of an experiment, we don't know what the extent of their injuries were or what the cost of their medical bills were. $50,000 per person, $100,000 per incident does not go very far in today's economy. And I urge the council to take responsibility for our citizens. We're talking about the people of Portland who are at risk from commercial drivers. Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Kaufman?
No.
Hales?
I'm not going to support the amendment, but I'll hear testimony on the subject. No.
And, Mayor, I have one additional amendment.
Yes.
I'll hand this out. And this, I've discussed this briefly with Commissioner Novick this morning, and this was brought to our attention yesterday. my amendment would amend 16.40.160C. To give taxi cab companies the flexibility of using more than one unique color to identify their cabs. This issue came to me yesterday through one of the cab companies that, in effect, made the case that they may choose to have more than one color scheme. I guess we could call them the Oregon Ducks of cab companies. And in addition, we currently don't require a uniform color, obviously, for any of the TNCs, and so we don't regulate that area. And it seemed to me, while this is not the most important issue we're going to address, I couldn't see a good reason why we wouldn't afford the same flexibility to the cab companies to choose more than one unique color to identify their cabs. And let's just use an example of EcoCab. They may choose to have a chocolate brown, a green, and a blue, all that may or may not be identified as having an environmental branding, but have the flexibility to do so. I can't think of a good reason why we would regulate one and not the other, so I'm offering this amendment.
Second.
Okay.
Further discussion? Second. Sorry, didn't know it hadn't been seconded. Thank you. Further discussion?
I'm curious as to what Mr. Hockaday thinks of this idea.
Well, taxis do have the exclusive right to queue in taxi stands and to accept street hails. And part of that exclusive right is that those vehicles are very clearly identifiable by their unique color and design scheme. So I think that removing that color requirement would make it more challenging to easily identify vehicles for the use of street hails.
Are you saying that TNCs are not easily identifiable?
TNCs are not allowed to accept street hails. They are not allowed to queue in taxi stands.
But there was a question about whether the sign is visible enough on all sides. So by saying that the taxis have to be clearly identifiable, that implies that the Uber and Lyft vehicles are not.
Well, the difference, Commissioner, is that with Uber and Lyft, with the app, you have a digital record of who exactly is giving you the ride, and you don't have to rely on your recollection as to what the cab looked like. So I'm actually curious about this amendment. I mean, what the final words in the provision would still be as approved by the director. And I'm actually wondering if the director might speak to whether she would find it too much of a burden to review color schemes.
Good morning, Mayor, Commissioners. Can you repeat the question of for what the work would be for PBOT to do in this instance?
Well, what it would mean is every taxi vehicle affiliated with the taxi company currently must be painted in the unique color and display the design scheme of the affiliated taxi company. The amendment would be to strike be painted in the unique color and instead say display the design scheme of the affiliated taxi company in a manner that clearly identifies the taxi company as approved by the director.
Mr. Novick, just to be clear, the as approved by the director, I believe, modifies the language about the design scheme. I'm not suggesting in this amendment that the director be the art czar approving colors. She has to approve many things with CABS. As long as there's an identification of the company and it has the licensing stuff, we're giving her the flexibility to allow people to use other colors. And it's not meant to burden her. It is meant to give the companies additional flexibility. And I'm guessing that there'll be some companies that think there's a competitive advantage in having a uniform, unique color, because for some people that's a shorthand of what cab they're going to get into. They're just in the habit of getting in one that's green or yellow or something. For others, like particularly me in the evening, I can't tell the color of a cab. So that's not the distinguishing characteristic. I look to see that it has a license, that there's someone competent to drive, and that they have a photograph and a license that I can verify. We're not trying to. It was not my intent to create a whole nother level of administrative burden for the director.
I do think, though, that what the director would wind up doing is determining whether the design scheme clearly identifies the taxi company. So I think that would become sort of a judgment call as to whether a taxi company that uses multiple colors is in fact clearly identifying itself. And
we could take the as approved out. I think that was originally. I believe that's in the existing code to give you the flexibility to make sure that there isn't someone gaming the system or doing something that creates havoc in the marketplace. But it keeps you in the mix so that you're using your good judgment, which is why I kept it in.
Okay, so from a public safety perspective, I think because there are street hails allowed for the cabs, it is just important that they are clearly identified as a taxi, as long as that is still included in the rules, that it be clearly identified. And the company associated with it, I don't administratively see an issue for us, and I think we're still protecting people who would be hailing cabs on the street so that they have visual identification of a cab company.
And let me be clear, this is not intended to erode or dilute in any way the other requirements of what's a cab and the licensing, the standards. This might give someone the flexibility to use a light green, a heavy green, a green with a stripe or something. And I don't think this is the most important issue before us, but it does seem like it creates a little more of a level playing field to give the cab companies that option.
I don't see any issues with it, but I welcome the cab companies to testify on that later.
We'll take testimony on this as well. So could we take a vote, please, on accepting this amendment?
Novick?
Aye.
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Salzman?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. Okay. Any more amendments?
Commissioner, are you going to present your other one on the TNC dress signage?
No. I'm happy to have a colloquy with Mr. Holliday, but we talked about that yesterday, and I was persuaded to defer on it.
We've heard testimony that the Uber and other decals are sometimes difficult to see, and your amendment specifies how clear they must be. Can you give me a summary as to why?
Yeah, Mr. Okay? Holliday, why don't you tell when we raised this issue yesterday about requiring a PFHT vehicle decal. With a specific number for each vehicle, and they require that to be certified. You and Commissioner Novick had some fairly strong feelings about that. Why don't you share those with us again?
Sure, absolutely. So the trade dress requirement for TNCs is not the only identification requirement that the TNCs have. They actually are required to provide more information to consumers, and it's primarily built in with the app. So not only do the vehicles have trade dress in the front, and these new rules are proposing that they be required in the front and the rear, But the app itself has to clearly identify the driver, picture of the driver, the name of the driver, description of the vehicle, the license plate of the vehicle. So there's actually more identification requirements for the TNCs in that regard for the consumers.
And when we were discussing this, Commissioner Fritz, someone in the room actually took out their phone and showed me some old rides and the identifying information on the phone. And it struck me based on that that, in fact, the customer gets more information on his or her phone that then becomes a permanent record than we'd be requiring in this on the car. And so it struck me as being a nice to have, but not a need to have.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, more amendments, if any? All right. Thank you very much. Anything else you need to put into the record before we take testimony?
Thank you.
Okay, thanks very much. Okay, so let's go to the sign-up sheet from the last hearing, please, and call any of the folks that were there and didn't get a chance to speak and give that opportunity now.
Okay, we have 12 today. Mm-hmm. First, please come up, Peter Newell, John Middleton, and that would be Stephen Clefori is reading his testimony. And Tesfe Alim. And they'll be followed by Ron Norrie, Brian Honeyman, and Wendy Wellington.
Good morning. Welcome. You can go ahead while they're getting settled.
Hi, City Council Mayor. My name is Peter Newell. I'm a Lyft driver. Lyft has been a life-changing event for me. For 15 years, I've worked 2 full-time jobs, 40 or more hours a week, and have not been able to make ends meet. With Lyft, I now am able to work a single 60 to 65-hour week job, and I'm making well over $1,000 a week on a consistent basis. So for those who think that Lyft is a part-time job for college students taking away full-time jobs from taxi drivers, they should be aware of the fact that Lyft incentivizes all of their drivers to work a minimum of 50 hours a week by allowing them to keep 100% of the fare that is taken in on each ride. And Lyft is satisfied with simply taking the $1.55 service fee they add to each ride. Because of this, I'm now able to see my wife. I actually have a date night with her every week. And when she needs me to come home and take care of some emergency around the house, like the water heater that just blew up, I can just stop my job and go home and deal with the issue. I don't have to worry about going to a boss and seeing if I can keep my job if I go home and put a new water heater in. There's a few things that people have been speaking about in previous testimony based on supposition. This, with no knowledge of how things work. In the first phase of the Lyft app, I'm free to do anything I want. Frequently, I take a nap. I'm not driving around because driving around is not going to get me a hail because I'm not allowed to take hails. So the first thing after I drop off a customer, I find a safe place to park where I'm not interfering with traffic and I can be sitting off to the side of the road. I might catch up on my email. I might go get some lunch. I can take a nap, and I don't have to worry about missing a ride because when I'm taking a nap and I get a ride offer, I get this really loud, obnoxious noise that wakes me up. If I'm driving and I get a request, I don't have to be looking at my app to see, am I going to get a request while I'm driving to get to the place to park? Because my app is so loud, I'm going to hear it. I can reach up and touch the app without having to look at it because all I have to do is touch the bottom of that screen. And it will instantly start to navigate me to my passenger. So I never have to see where I'm going. I don't have to look at my phone at all. There is no danger involved with the app.
You mean it gives you audible commands about where
to turn? Yeah, it'll either give me my choice of Waze or Google Maps, but whichever one I have preset. But it'll automatically start to navigate me to the passenger, and it will announce the name of the passenger to me. So that when I arrive at the location, I can ask the passenger without ever having looked at my phone, is this John? So that I know that the right person is getting in my car. In my app, in the app, when you request a ride from me, there's not only a picture of myself, but there's a picture of my car. It shows my license plate number, and it has a brief bio of me. So that you have questions you can ask of me. If you'd like.
Thank you. It's very helpful. Appreciate
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
So I need you to wrap up because you're out of time.
Okay. Sorry. Absolutely.
Thank you. Go ahead, Stephen, please.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, My name is Stephen Gafuri. I represent Broadway Cab, and I'm working with the Transportation Fairness Alliance. I wanted to make one comment before I read this testimony, having to do with the $500,000 that is, have been correctly stated, is the minimum requirement for taxis presently. That is a very old number, Mr. Mayor, and it is obsolete at this point. All our taxi companies carry well over $1 million insurance presently, and while $500,000 would be a better figure than $50,000, which is ridiculous, it still is a very obsolete number, and we would be delighted to have the minimum raised for taxi cabs as well as TNCs to $1 million.
I'll have some questions for you about that, but go ahead with the testimony you want to read.
Mr. Mayor, because we don't want to is not a sufficient reason for a transportation company to refuse to offer protection to innocent people who may be harmed by the company's vehicles. But it was the best that Uber could do at the meeting that you held last week. Uber wants $50,000 of coverage. Notice that Uber did not say we cannot afford it. That would have been a ludicrous statement for a $50 billion company to say, especially when looking at comparing with the Portland taxi cab companies that have well over $1 million, 24/7. Even our very small companies can afford it. There's no problem about Uber affording $1 million. The period one is an important period for the taxi, for the TNCs. The reason that Uber and Lyft are able to be successful in our market is because they can say to their people who want to ride, we can be to your place within 2 or 3 minutes to pick up a fare. There's only one reason that they're able to do that, and that is because, as you just heard, they've got thousands of people out there with their apps turned on. Those people are effectively working for Uber or Lyft, because if they weren't, Uber and Lyft would not exist. They cannot exist without thousands of people with their apps on. You heard about the $50,000 as some national figure. Let's take a look. Where did this come from? It did not come from an analysis of good public policy. It did not come from anybody representing consumers or people who have been injured in automobile accidents. It came from a group of insurance companies meeting with Uber because Uber didn't want to have any insurance at all on phase one. And then they killed a little girl down in San Francisco, and there was a big public outrage, and they needed to do something. So they worked together with the insurance companies, and this came to me straight from the insurance company lobbyist. This is not something I made up or heard over the Internet. The insurance companies made out a deal and said, all right, how about we have a low rate for Uber, and we can pick up the rest of it. This would give us the opportunity to sell a lot of insurance policies. This has nothing to do with public concerns or worry about who gets injured. This has to do with a cozy arrangement made between Uber and some insurance policies. And then how did they get this in various cities and counties and states around the country? By their huge lobbying effort, not because of good public policy. And where some cities stood up and said, no, we want to protect our citizens with $1 million, Uber then went to the legislatures and got the legislatures to overrule, saying, no, the cities cannot have higher requirements than
Let me testify, and then I've got questions for both of you on this subject, so go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. First of all, I just want to say something that is over and over is commented. We're not asking to stop Uber and Lyft to stop operating. We're asking equal treatment of insurance, permitting, uniforms, and inspection, background check, all these kind of things. We're not asking that Uber and Lyft has to stop. But let me go to my point. I would like to offer my support to the testimony that would be provided by Wendy Willington. I also believe that the proposed code requirement, an insurance rating of AM-based A-minus, is excessive and will cripple small companies like mine. For 3 years, I have done business with American Service Company. They are a leading provider of insurance products to the taxi industry. They are a proven, reliable company with a great track record of fast claim payments. They do not have an AM best minus, AM minus rating, but they're excellent at what they do, and more affordable for a smaller business like mine. I also ask you to amend the proposed code to add a second rating agency, Demotech, to the insurance rating system. No public policy is served by giving AM best companies a monopoly or by any level 8. Huge companies that really does not rate on company works with or fighting claimants. Finally, the code should be expanded to allow PFHT operators to buy equivalent insurance across all periods from carriers with a B rating or better. That's a critical request. I ask you to please take action on it today. And I just want to say something that I'm surprised in my own analysis. When we're talking about the period one, period two, period three, I was surprised when I was trying to analyze a year and a half worth of accidents. From all that, over 65% of the time, the accidents were period one. And all the time, we have to have insurance. And the other thing that I will say is, we are required $1 million. That's what it is. And we cover, you know, the drivers cover a collision coverage. So everything is covered here, but I'm struggling to pay the insurance premium every month, and now I'm looking to a company that has $41 billion not to pay even $1 million coverage for its, you know, vehicles and drivers. That's just asking equal treatment for all our providers.
Can we go back to your first issue, and then I want to talk with, have some questions for both of you about the insurance issue. So we're separately in this code package changing the rating requirement for insurance companies that applies to your business and other taxi cab companies. I guess that, to me, is a new issue. I had not seen this before.
Okay, what happened is we were insured by American Service Company, which is a Demotech. Mm-hmm. And then we were told that your insurance company is not acceptable by the city code. So what happens is the next renewal time that I'm going to renew in December, I have to look for AM best rating, A minus A insurance company so that I have to pay more insurance. So that's one of the things that we have been talking to staff, and they're saying, we don't know, this is a code. So imagine if you're allowing a personal insurance for Uber to be driven by a personal insurance, and now you're trying to tell us you have to have A minus rating when we are a company. Is this not, you know, a place where you have a contradiction? Can you please see this and rectify all these things? And we need these companies that are AM best B rating companies are the best companies. You can have rating levels, which is what it says very good. Those are companies that are rated by their own, you know, level of insurance guideline.
So this was an administrative decision by PBOT. It's not part of the regulations. I'm not saying it's not an important matter. I'm just trying to figure out where this came from. So this was an administrative decision by the city to require you to have a different rating basis for your insurance company?
Yes. Okay. That we were told because it's a code. So we can't move. Okay. And now we're deciding to change to another insurance company which has an A minus rating.
Okay, I get it. So we'll have a chance for us to get some further information from staff about that. So back to the insurance issue for a minute. As we have been debating this for a long time, and I've been thinking, albeit maybe a little more slowly about this than I should have. There's a warm side of this issue and a cold side of this issue. The warm side of this issue is we want to make sure that we're giving the citizens of our city reasonable protection from harm. All of us want that. You want that. Everybody wants that. And then there's the cold side of this issue, which is that it's a proxy fight between the taxi cab companies and the TNCs. So let me spin a scenario for you, Stephen, and have you respond. And that is, let's stipulate, I think you got it right, that Uber and the insurance industry were having a big fight all over the country, nationally. Somebody can correct my understanding of this if I don't get it right. They were having a big fight nationally all over the country. They also had some catastrophic incidents like the one that we've heard about in San Francisco. So they reached a national agreement about providing insurance for themselves, for their drivers, and otherwise, right? I won't get into all the details. But they reached a national agreement. And maybe it's true. I don't know this. I've never seen their national agreement. Maybe it's true that that national agreement says, and you won't go operating, you won't go hopscotching up the scale of agreeing to cities that require you to do more. Maybe that's part of their deal. I don't know this, okay? Maybe it is. And so if we were to require a higher level of insurance than that agreement, and if they have that understanding with the insurance companies, they might leave the Portland marketplace. Would that be a good outcome?
Mr. Mayor, that's a very interesting question because this is exactly what happens all over the United States and as far away as, or closest from here as Eugene. It's a typical tactic of a company that's basically a bully. And, you know, we've talked about this.
I understand that, and I've experienced that, but I'm saying,
so what
would that be
what
a good outcome? Would that be what, good?
Here's their outcome. Their outcome is this. All right, if you're not going to play our game, we'll take our ball and go home.
Right.
And that go out, that taking their ball and go home extends out to the city limits. And then they go out there and they sit. And they wait. And they wait for political pressure to happen on the city council. And they send an email out, or however they get their apps out, with text messages, whatever, to their all their riders out there. They've got a fabulous database. And they say, don't you like Uber? Don't you like Lyft? Don't you want to have us come here?
Right.
And so all these people will send you texts. You'll get 10,000 texts saying, oh, please don't take Uber away. And this is what happens all over the United States. The next thing happens, the city council gets, excuse me, Christmas. We can't afford this. I can't have 10,000 people not wanting me. I'm up for re-election. Let's renegotiate with Uber. This is the pattern over and over again. It has nothing to do with public policy.
Right, and I understand that description may actually be very close to what could happen.
Absolutely.
But I'm saying, would that be a good outcome if they left, if they took their ball and went home? We were back to the situation that we were in when we first had our own head-on collision with Uber, and they stopped operating in the city it stopped operating in the part of the metro area where we write the rules and continued to operate in the rest of the metro area where no one has written any rules. So there were 600,000 people in the city of Portland, and there's 1,600,000 people in the rest of the metro area. The 600,000 people live in a city where the city council is adopting regulations about TNCs. The 1,600,000 people live in cities or counties where they have chosen to not write any rules at all. So if they left Portland, we would go back to a situation in which they were operating completely unregulated in two-thirds of the metropolitan area by population and not operating at all, but perhaps carrying out the political campaign that you just described in the area where we govern. Would that be a good outcome?
Mr. Mayor, let me carry that scenario out. Last legislative session, last spring, I had a bill representing Broadway Cab asking for $1 million insurance for TNCs through period 1, 2, and 3. The bill, although it came very close, did not pass. And the reason it did not pass is that people, especially Portland legislators, said, I want to see what the city of Portland does first. I don't want to go out and be at odds with my mayor and my city council. We have a bill prepared today for the February session. If this city council says, yes, we want to have a higher limit, we want to protect our citizens, I think we will pass that bill, which will cover Coos Bay has a taxi company, cover Eugene, cover Salem, cover the Portland Medford, cover the Portland suburban area, so that everybody in the state who gets into a TNC taxi cab, and I use that phrase advisedly because they are taxi cabs. Everyone who gets into a TNC taxi cab will have insurance if they get hurt, and everybody who's in that community, if they get run over, will get hurt. And I think this, if I just may, one other thing, Mr. Mayor, this talk about how many accidents there are is interesting but not really relevant. It takes one accident where a person is permanently disabled, or one accident where a breadwinner is killed, and you run that $50,000 up real fast. So in the next couple of years, if we have only one accident where someone is badly hurt, then it was worth having that protection. It doesn't cost very much. Uber can afford it.
Right. Well, you're speculating that they would submit to this requirement. But if
ultimately, I don't think they can afford not to be here in the city of Portland. It's too much for them, number one. Number two, if the city of Portland agrees to raise this limit, I think we'll have a statewide legislation that, that can pass. This is not a Republican legislature down there, Mr. Mayor. And as we've had in these other states like Idaho and Ohio, where the Uber lobbyists have gone into a friendly atmosphere. We've got a Democratic legislature that's very supportive of consumer protection. And if you put that together with the support from the city council so that the Portland legislators say, this is what my city wants to do, I think we can pass that bill. Interestingly, it's suburban legislators who are carrying the water on this issue, Mr. Chair. Mr. Mayor.
All right, thank you.
Could I ask another question about insurance? And as you first make a comment that I believe that a person injured or killed in a crash, their estate would come after the city if we have knowingly approved commercial drivers with a lesser level of insurance, and I think that they have a good chance that they would prevail. My question is, going back to the very beginning of these sets of hearings about being certified for insurance in the state of Oregon, and a question as to whether the James River Corporation or insurance company rises to the level that we expect. Can you refresh my memory about that issue?
Mr. Mayor, Madam Commissioner, yes, the Port of Portland requires $1 million insurance, phase one, phase two, phase three. Those people are covered by James River Insurance. You all have in your office files certificates of insurance, the copies that we've provided for you. I realize that this has been a period of time in the last couple of months where you've had 10 or 15 huge, huge issues and not time to focus on those kind of things like looking at the insurance copies they would give to you. But you'll find in your files insurance assurance certificates from James River for $1 million, or Port of Portland, phase one, phase two, phase three.
And is their company the AM Best rated company?
I don't know about that, Madam Chair. All I do know is that we have, this issue was raised to us by two Eco Cab, you're going to hear testimony from them, and by our smaller cab companies here in Portland, that there's a real problem. And that this is an easy problem to solve, and I don't think it'll harm anybody's protection if they get first class insurance.
Thank you. I'm hoping that we have some insurance representatives.
We do.
Okay, great.
Good to hear.
Thank you.
Okay, we may have other questions for you later. But
thank you
very much. Thank you all. And we'll get an answer from staff to SFA on that issue. Okay, let's take the next folks, please.
Next three, please come up. Ron Norrie, Brian Honeyman, Wendy Kellington, followed by Alan Lowden, Lightning, and Patrick Montgomery.
Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Ron Canori, CEO of EcoCab. We are one of the newest entrants to the Portland market, having received licenses to serve the public with a unique for hire riding experience, namely a great ride in a non-polluting Tesla, driven by a fully qualified driver who is an employee of my company, receiving a living wage and health benefits. Thank you for the opportunity to appear on this important subject. Like others who are trying to bring disruptive and innovative service to underserved Portland consumers, we are finding a market that is hungry for high-quality, on-demand service. But we are prepared to do that without asking you to radically deregulate the system that provides consumer protections, public safety, and other valued public policies. If you want riders that are protected, drivers that can earn a living wage, and a for-hire transportation system that exists on a level playing field, I respectfully suggest that you reject the task force recommendations. There's a lot of good work that was done by this task force, and it's useful to have that data about the unmet needs of service in our community. But as a guide for public policy, the report is fundamentally flawed. The pricing strategy leads to the undermining of city and state consensus on living wages and fair working conditions. By setting a minimum price per mile, this will ensure a minimum living wage. Unequal treatment of taxi cab and TNC business models are baked into the operational regulations in the form of exempting TNCs from certain requirements or allowing them to externalize costs that must be internalized by taxi cab companies. For example, why cameras in cabs but not in TNCs? Why can Uber come in any rainbow of any color they want, but taxis must be a uniform color? Insurance rating monopoly. By Uber's favored insurance rating company, AM Best, puts taxicabs at a significant financial disadvantage, especially when other acceptable options such as Demotrek rating company exist and could provide some price competition and relief for small business cab companies. The Portland City Council is right to demand innovative, high-quality service for the consuming public, but I am here as just one of many companies who can promise you that you can have disruption and innovation without sacrificing core values in our community. Please tell your staff to go back and remove the fundamental flaws in the product you are reviewing so that you can truly offer the public a for-hire transportation industry that protects and promotes our community. Thank you.
Thank you. Wendy, would you like to be next?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the council, Wendy Kellington representing EcoCab. Thank you, Commissioner Fish and council, for your amendment regarding taxicab colors. That's a step in the right direction. We really appreciate that. Thank you. I also want to point out that the reason you care about this insurance rating issue is that the AM Best A-minus rating does not ensure that the city of Portland is protected. The city of Portland wants to be a named insured, but if you're a named insured with AM Best A-minus James River, which is non-admitted in Oregon, that means that if they fail, that they don't pay into the state safety net, and the city of Portland has no liability protection. That's a big deal issue, so that's an issue for the city. I want to let you know that the proposal before you purports to be even-handed amendments. It's really a stack deck against taxis generally and specifically against this new entrant into the marketplace built on a business model that is totally aligned with express city policies. If the city stands for innovation, fair wages generally, and for taxi drivers specifically, and for clean air, why would it adopt amendments that propose that to lock taxi meters and taxi fare systems into a 1960s vintage technology that encourages Walmart-like predatory pricing practices designed to drive out competitors like EcoCab, that pays its drivers a living wage, benefits, and complies with the city's sick time off policy and law? Why would it adopt a draconian regulatory model that falls disparately on small, zero-emission taxi companies to buy expensive insurance that only benefits Uber and Lyft, but has no relevancy to established city policy and to maintaining the safety of the city's system? Why would it force a choice between new electric vehicles that are incompatible with old-school taxi meter technology in favor of gas guzzlers that are compatible with that old school technology? I have provided you with three things, and I hope you look at them. One are some modest proposed amendments that would address those three issues. In addition, I provided two articles for you that talk about the new taxi operating system that is not a taxi meter designed to replace the antiquated jumble of meters, navigation devices, and credit card machines currently found in many cabs with a single cloud-enabled smartphone. This is the technology that is moving forward in San Francisco, in New York City, in Philadelphia, in Boston, and in Washington, D.C. If you have questions about that, please feel free to let me know. With respect to base fares, if base fares are not required by the city as they used to be, then it will be impossible for companies that do pay living wages, that do observe compliance with the city's sick time off policy, that do carry this ridiculous amount of insurance that Uber doesn't have to carry, to compete in the city marketplace. So you end up with no zero emission vehicles, taxi drivers making less than minimum wage, lots of gas guzzlers on the road, because that's what we're encouraging